I am the architect. I created the Matrix.
Shall we play a game?
Let's get started on this Saturday morning. I have three or four things I'm going to talk about. Of course, the famous Burger King ad. No smoking money, FedEx and a tax cut. And finally, some comments on Mueller and the 20 people he has questioned. I love college. We drank beer and ran around and played sports, dated girls. I had a great time. For the most part, we just grew up. Maybe that's what college is supposed to do. I'm not sure. But no one who has gone to college and received degrees, remember, more than 20 or 30% at the most of the courses they took. I couldn't tell you all the courses I took, but I can tell you which ones mattered, and it was very few. But I had to take them anyway to get the degree. We've all seen the famous Saturday Night Live skit where Father, or what's his name, talked about his new college that he was starting, and you could get a degree in like 20 or 30 minutes. And he said, for example, let's take Spanish class. Our Spanish class, we learn how to do one thing. He'd say, ¿Cómo está usted? And then you took the exam and you replied, how are you? He said, fine, now you have 5 credits of Spanish, because that's all people remember anyway. I may have taken Spanish for 1 or 2 semesters. I still only know ¿Cómo está usted? Now, I don't know anybody that's any different. I'm not saying college isn't important. I think it is. But to say that our universities are grasping what's required for our young people today is a terrible misstatement. They just don't understand and get it. If they did, a bachelor's degree would take 2 years, and they would just eliminate all the extraneous courses that a person doesn't need. A degree in engineering could take 2 years. And then maybe you work for 2 years in the field. But the point is, you'd work in your discipline. You wouldn't be taking courses because it's a university and their belief is you need a broad-based education, whatever that means. And they do weird things. And we've known for years the issues with sports, how it dominates colleges. And it goes without saying that the guys who control the basketball team, the directors of basketball, they make $3 million a year, and the math professors make $150,000 or $100,000. It isn't right. We all know it exists, but no one does anything about it. For years, Trump knew that repatriating money from overseas was the right thing to do. I heard it talked about for 10 or 12 years. He got up one morning and said, I'm going to do it. And he got the votes and he did it. And now we see the benefits of it every day if we are reading our paper about the amount of money that's coming back into the United States. My point is that things go along as they are until someone, a person, rises up and makes a difference. I don't know when that's going to happen at the universities because we are such a sports-dominated culture and our universities are basically sports-dominated institutions. A good example of the things they do that doesn't make any sense is a recent API article. And the article starts off by saying 17 universities oppose anti-smoking group with tobacco ties. First place, the headline hardly makes sense. It says these universities are against anti-smoking groups. Well, anti-smoking groups are people that are against smoking. But here's the issue. Philip Morris, as part of one of their settlement activities, has donated $1 billion, that's $1 billion, to a foundation called A Smoke-Free World. And as part of its settlement, it has to offer grants to universities or other institutions with this money in order to promote a smoke-free world. That's right. There's $1 billion in a foundation that universities can apply for and receive a grant to do work that will oppose smoking. But guess what? They don't want the money now. It wasn't long ago, I don't know, 10, 15 years ago, 20 years, when all the cigarette companies were getting sued and all the money was flowing into the state tax coffers for education, and some had to be spent on advertising to stop smoking, and of course, some had to be spent or inserted into a foundation that would give grants to universities or other institutions to fund anti-smoking or stop smoking research. But no, the universities, in their purity of heart, said the group being this anti-smoking group called A Smoke-Free World, is too closely tied to the industry. Philip Morris says, no, it's a separate foundation. It has $1 billion. It can do with it what it wants. And the money has to be spent, by the way, to oppose smoking. They have all the quotes from these universities taking this particular moral stance. We're not going to take this money from Philip Morris, even though it comes through a nonprofit foundation, because we believe the money is tainted. Oh my God. Look at some of these universities' portfolios and see where they invest. I won't be surprised if some of them have investments in some of the largest companies in the world that make cigarettes. And they have huge portfolios. I don't know that for a fact. But they invest in many, many different companies because these universities have billions and billions of dollars in their trust funds. Now, Philip Morris says the foundation has the money and it can do with it what the foundation wants. Now, here's a statement by the 17 deans of these schools, deans of universities, Harvard, of course, Harvard, who else? It's a whole list of them. They're all big-name universities. And here's the statement. It says, if Philip Morris wants to end smoking, it should stop selling and advertising cigarettes. Well, by the way, Philip Morris doesn't want to end smoking. That's how they make their money. And by the way, we have a world of other countries where smoking is not considered to be a problem. And if you want to look at it, our average age expectancy in many cases is lower than countries that promote smoking. Go over to Europe and spend a few months walking around or driving around, and you will see people puffing like they used to do in the United States in the 50s. Now, maybe we'll outlive them. Maybe 30 years from now, we'll live longer than they do. But the point is, everybody doesn't go along with the anti-smoking. And no, I'm not in favor of smoking. That's not the point. But Philip Morris is not going to stop making cigarettes. And like it or not, the people that are employed making cigarettes wouldn't like it a bit if Philip Morris stopped it. So the fact that the deans are saying to Philip Morris, we have this moral high ground, and if Philip Morris, if you're so smart and so clever that you want to stop smoking, stop people from smoking, then stop selling cigarettes. Well, you couldn't have a more stupid statement by university deans. Not only is it nonsense, it's not constructive. You want to be constructive? Take part of the $1 billion, and if you like, run ads against smoking. Create ads that modify people's behavior. Philip Morris was slapped on the hands, like other cigarette manufacturers, and they have had to, reluctantly I'm sure, place $1 billion in a not-for-profit fund to fund projects to stop smoking. Universities are not the pure states of morality they seem to indicate. Read the paper about the problems with universities, from sports to other things, and it should be clear that they are not some sort of moral towers of purity. Take the money. Go after the $1 billion and do something constructive. It's not constructive to sign a letter. I mean, how stupid is that? We signed a letter to Philip Morris that says, if you want to stop smoking, stop making and selling cigarettes. It's just stupid. It's asinine. It's non-constructive. Oh, but the universities, they're afraid that the foundation will try to produce research promoting some other smoking alternative. Wait a minute, universities. You are making the funding request. When you get the money, you do what your funding request says you're going to do. So you control that. No, there's some other reason that's going on. Maybe the universities don't like the way the money is going to be allocated. But clearly it's not that they don't want to participate in the $1 billion. If we know anything about university research, that is, they need research grants. Ellen McKenzie, Dean of Johns Hopkins University's Public Health School, said the possibility of forthcoming regulation makes it even more important for schools to be cautious about funding sources. What in the world does that mean? How do they get their name in these articles? She goes on to say, this is an especially critical time for tobacco control efforts. Said McKenzie, who organized the statement from the public health schools. She's the one that organized the statement from the 16 deans. Now she goes on to say, thoughtful, independent, academic research will be essential to guide policy. Well, wait a minute, McKenzie. There's $1 billion waiting for you there to go after it, to do independent academic research to guide policy. What is going on here? Who knows? That's the whole idea. Just another example of university activities that don't make any sense. And by the way, they're doing this with our tax dollars. These people at these universities are getting paid, well, maybe not all. They're not for profits. They get paid because consumers pay taxes. Believe me, I've had university people on my board of directors, and I love them. They're academic, they're thoughtful, but they don't understand cash flow because they've never had, for the most part, to make a payroll. Every couple of weeks, they get paid. When they're on the board of an organization that has to make payrolls, they don't understand why cash is important because they never have to be concerned about it. Oh, sure, they have budgets for their departments. And it may go down 10% or up 10%, but there's no performance related to the budget as in a business. Where if you don't perform, you don't produce revenues, you run out of cash, and you go away. Don't kid yourself. If the universities were ever accountable for doing what they propose to do, which is to educate our young people, many of them would be gone. They would simply be out of business. Okay, if you disagree with me, let me know. Okay, so let's move on. We have another subject I want to cover, and I hate to go over this subject again, but this whole issue of net neutrality. And the interesting thing about net neutrality is that people who are in favor of it say things like, well, let me find the actual article that I'm talking about so I can actually quote it. But give me a second. Let me run over to, if you haven't ever seen it before, the famous Burger King. I say a million people now have seen it. The Burger King example. So you probably don't even know that I was gone, but I was gone for about 10 minutes. I had to find this article. The article was titled, by the way, "Okay, now imagine net neutrality as a flame-grilled Whopper." Apparently this had about a million views. You've probably already seen it. But here's an interesting thing. In the article it states, net neutrality is the principle that internet providers treat all web traffic equally, and it's pretty much how the internet has worked since its creation. No, almost true. The fact is, the internet worked fine since its creation till about 2015, maybe 2014, when Obama wrote the new regulations that he imposed, and he called these regulations net neutrality. Now remember, no one had any trouble with the internet for 20 years. But all of a sudden, he wrote these new regulations. All the FCC has done, this guy, Ajit Pai, a Kansas native, by the way, all he did was roll back the regulations to the way they were for the 20 years when we had tremendous internet growth. That's what he did. Think of it this way. If Obama had never passed the regulations, we wouldn't even have the issue. The issue really revolves around very, very clever name, net neutrality. Who could be against that? I'm just in favor of rolling back the rules the way they were before Obama passes regulations, because things were working fine then. Now here's what Burger King did. Acquired, and they were told they'll be charged different prices for a Whopper based on how many hamburgers could be made in a certain length of time. In other words, they're going to get their hamburgers based on how much time it took to make the hamburger. I don't even know where the analogy is. But they did it, and gosh, everybody just liked this. And because all the Burger King customers were unhappy, the conclusion was, therefore, people are unhappy with net neutrality. I think most people don't even know what it is. They think that being for it is like some positive thing, because neutral, like, God, that sounds pretty good. And I'm certainly in favor of neutrality, things being equal. But I don't think a lot of people understand the internet worked fine for 20 years. So the whole Burger King thing to me is bent way out of shape, frankly. Now, I had somebody write in some comments on net neutrality, and I agree. 83% of Americans are in favor of net neutrality. I never saw the survey, but my intuition is, from most surveys, most Americans don't know what it is. Now, he was also quoting, and 75% of voting Republicans are in favor of net neutrality. And he gave me the links. No, I didn't check on the links, because without knowing the details of the survey, it's hard to know what the results actually are. But if people are asked the question, were you happy with the internet from 1994 to 2015? Most people would say, yeah, it was doing great. People made a lot of money. Internet companies exploded. They would probably say yes. Then you say, are you in favor of net neutrality? They would say yes. Because they think that's the same, but it's not. Roughly speaking, only one provider. There are two. I think I pay too much money for my internet service. But I can't switch. Also prohibitive. At the point where if you have limited competition, it can be a problem. And people in rural areas, yeah, they may have a problem. I don't know how you can have any regulation or any law. So that may not have the same advantage as other people, probably. And as I've said before, I'm in an area where we theoretically have competition, but we practically don't. Now, the same, right, he took some time to write an email to me, and I appreciate that, agrees with me that Trump shouldn't testify under oath. Now, he makes another point, because I made the point that in business, results trump process. That doesn't mean to me that process is important. It doesn't mean that you should do things that are illegal in the process or immoral in the process. But in the final analysis, it's results that do matter. And there are some situations where people are so embedded in the process, they forget that we want results. Example, of course, is politics in general. How long have we talked about the benefits of repatriating money from overseas? The process. Trump comes along, gets results. Results do count. Now, he had to go through a process to get it. So it's not that the process doesn't matter at all. I'm certainly not stating that. But you can get so embedded in the process that you never get to the results. Organizations to me are very similar or can be similar in this situation. If you work in a large corporation, you know that you can send emails around all day long. conform to the process, conform to the protocols of the corporation, but not get anything done. Yet conforming to all the process. Until someone gets up and says, okay, we're so involved in this process of sending emails around and copying everybody and making sure that we follow the protocols, we forgot that what we're trying to do is satisfy this client. And the process won't satisfy them. So I think a lot about process and results. And I don't say that results are everything, but results do make the difference. If I had my choice between process and results, I'd take results every time. I'm not suggesting that the process should be immoral or illegal or harm people. I'm just saying that when I look at the measurement of an activity, I have to look at the results. And for me, Trump is a results-oriented person. Now, I want to jump into another quick point. I have to be able to find it. I'll try to. And that's, of course, what FedEx is doing. I think I may have mentioned this before. FedEx is increasing their contributions to retirement fund. They're providing bonuses and things of this nature. This goes on and on. Probably Hannity or one of the, you know, Republican newscasters or, you know, TV casters will make a list someday of all the companies that have done things because of the tax cuts. And you still hear Nancy Pelosi saying, oh my gosh, the tax cuts, they're bad, they're dangerous, they're going to harm America. The Democrats are just stupid. If I was a Democratic leader, I would tomorrow get up and get behind the tax cuts. I would criticize other Democrats for not being in favor of it. Because what is more un-American than to be against letting consumers keep their own money? To take a position contrary to that is a losing proposition. The Democrats should just change. Look what Trump did. And I applaud him for it. I've been in favor of it. Give these dreamers legal status. Why not? They're going to end up getting it anyway. They're already here. We're not sending them home. Nobody's going to round up a million people and say, go home. It isn't going to happen. He's pragmatic. Now, he'll be criticized for this. Republicans will say, oh my gosh, you just did something horrible, horrible, horrible. Wait a minute. What he's doing is common sense. They're here. Through no fault of their own. Sign them up. Make them legal. The Republicans, they're worried, oh my gosh, they might vote democratically. Wait a minute. If Republicans put forth the program, they may vote Republican. But that has nothing to do with it. And Trump doesn't care about that. He's just thinking about what makes sense. Now, I've heard different numbers. There's 800,000 dreamers. There's 1.6 million dreamers. I don't care whether it's 800,000 or 1.6 million, I'm in favor of giving them legal status tomorrow. Let them sign up, get the Social Security cards, make them a legal citizen. No, and I don't care if they don't speak English. I think they should learn, but I don't think that should be a parameter. We're not sending them home. Might as well make them legal. Get that off the table. The Democrats should say, we want to take credit for it. But see, this is the pragmatism of Trump. He knows in his heart he's not sending these people home. Now, the illegals, the felons, maybe he'll send them home. But these people that are here illegally, but not of their own volition, the dreamers, should be given legal status. I just think it's wonderful. It's a great example of what I call the pragmatism of somebody like Trump. He doesn't think as a Republican. He doesn't think as a Democrat. He's thinking about what's the right thing to do for America. This is what puzzles most people. You know, he'll probably get criticized. Oh my gosh, you're doing something that only Democrats would do. He doesn't care. What's the right thing to do? That's the issue. More power to you, Trump. You're doing the right thing. Oh, you're changing your whole immigration belief from the beginning. Well, maybe he is. So what? He's president. He probably learned a lot more today than he knew. And what I mean is he's learned a lot more in office than he knew when he was running for office. He also looks at the practicality of it. So that's all I'm going to say today. I was kind of going to get into the Mueller questioning, but you know, nothing's going to happen on that. I said almost a year ago, this investigation that's costing us hundreds of millions of dollars is going to go away. They won't find anything. Or if they do find something, they'll say, not enough to prosecute, but gee, we found some things. It'll be a political report. It won't be a legal report. And there's an issue, which is brought up many times, is that collusion in and of itself is not illegal. So they'll try to get him on some obstruction of justice issue. That isn't going to happen either. Accusation to proof is a million miles. And I hope Trump just brushes off the whole thing. I wish he'd stop even talking about it. I wish he'd just say, look, when they get finished, I'll read the report. Meantime, don't ask me any more questions because it gets in the way of policy making. Some things are just bumps in the road, and you should just go over them with your car and continue on down the street. This whole collusion investigation is simply a bump in the road. My advice to Trump, go over the bump, stop talking about it. Simply say, look, public, when we get the report, we'll read it all together. Meantime, I need to focus on policy. Of course, as usual, I can't find it, can I, right? I can't find the Burger King example. So I'm going to have to shut down just for a second, locate it, and then come right back. Hold on. I brought to you courtesy of-